right. Good morning and welcome to Minnesota Court of Appeals. I think the Chief Justice's legs are a little shorter than mine. This is usually the Supreme Court courtroom. Before we get started, can you hear me okay?
Sure.
I just want to make sure the microphones are working.
We'll get some no's back here.
Excuse me?
We have a no back here.
You can't hear me?
Okay.
Is there any way to adjust the volume? It's a big courtroom, and I have a hearing impairment, so I don't always hear so well. Just speak louder, better? Okay. Before we get started, I want to talk about the timing a little bit. Panels had some preliminary discussions, as you might expect, and I think we're of the opinion that 15 is not going to be sufficient. My inclination is to extend it to 30, and 5. What are council's reactions to that?
That's fine with us.
Okay, and you don't have to use all 30, by the way. I mean, there'll be no penalty for coming up short of that, but I'm just fearful that at 15, the questioning might consume all of the time and not allow council to make points you want to make that are aside from the questioning. Okay, over here. And the plan here was gonna be 8 and 7. Does that go to 15 and 15 or 16 and 14? 15 and 15. I just want to make sure I'm fair to everyone. With that, the first matter and only matter on the oral calendar for today is the matter of the issuance of air emissions permit for Polymet Mining. It looks like council are here and ready to proceed. When you begin your comments, identify yourself so that we've got that for the recording and the party you represent. State your name and proceed. Council.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Evan Mulholland, appearing on behalf of all relators, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, the Sierra Club, the Friends of the Boundary Waters Wilderness, the Center for Biological Diversity, and the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Your Honors, this case is about a sham permit, a permit that limits the Polymet facility to 32,000 tons of ore per day throughput. But the record shows that Polymet will seek to lift this cap and to make sufficient profits for its investors. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's failure to review or make any findings at all on this key issue of sham permitting was arbitrary and capricious. The PCA's failure requires a remand so that PCA can investigate and make findings sufficient for judicial review. I want to cover the applicable standard of review because there was some argument about that, and specifically the standard for Clean Air Act permitting. But first, I want to touch on some key facts to make sure we're on the same page. These facts show that Polymet presented one thing to the public and to the state, but something quite different to its investors and creditors.
Counsel, before we get there, there was no request for a contested case hearing, is that correct?
There was no request for a contested case hearing.
That's and I correct. Take it that was because the technical report didn't come out until after the public comment period closed?
That is correct. The technical report was released 10 days after the comment period closed.
And the comments that you're referencing regarding investors, they were made the day after the technical report, at least some of them?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Some of them were, I mean, there are some things that we reference in our brief throughout, you know, the history of this about increased throughput, but the ones that you're speaking of were then, yes. Okay. So in its air permit application, Polymet proposed a mine, like I said, that limited production to 32,000 tons per day. They proposed this limit in order to keep the mine out of the major category under the Clean Air Act. This category would have required—
To stay under the 250 tons per year.
Exactly. The synthetic miner permit that they applied for avoided a time-consuming and more stringent review, and this capped permit, like I said, is a synthetic miner permit. So, like we just discussed, 10 days after the comment period ended, Polymet released this report, this document that analyzed the financial viability of the synthetic miner plan. The technical report noted that the project as proposed, the 32,000 tons per day, was at the brink of being unprofitable. But the technical report was also a signal to its investors that Polymet was considering a much larger and faster mine. This technical report, this was commissioned by Polymet, and the important part, it has two parts, right? One is the economic feasibility of the 32,000 tons per day plan. It's the majority of the report. The part that I want to focus on is
called— the prediction there was a 10% profit margin or something, as I recall?
It was about a 10% return on investment, an internal rate of return. And also important, the net present value that was predicted at current at this time copper prices was a $270 million net present value.
And that price is lower now than it was at the time, right?
I believe so. The last time I checked, copper is lower than it was then.
Somewhat lower.
Somewhat lower.
Well, wasn't the representation made that if the copper prices dropped 10%, the net present value would be zero?
That is in this report.
Okay. And they've dropped over 10%, have they not? We could take judicial notice of that.
The last time I checked, that is correct, Your Honor. I mean, I didn't check this morning, but you could, for sure.
So it seems to me that part of the question is what should the MPCA have been looking at when they were taking, from your perspective, a hard look
right.
at the sham permitting issue? And to me, that also comes back to when did that obligation to take that hard look at the sham permitting issue kick in? So was it when you copied the commissioner on the SAIS request? Was it the December 13th letter? Was it some other time? Could you answer that for me?
Your Honor, I think it's a combination of all of those things. And it's really, when a synthetic miner permit's a special permit under the Clean Air Act, it's a permit where an entity, a facility, sort of promises that it's not going to go above a certain cap. And the point of the synthetic miner permit is that you avoid this time-consuming review, the best available control technology review. And the reason for that is that it's expensive. It takes a long time. And if you're a facility, you want to get going and you don't want to do all of these things. That's in the literature. It's common. So let me, sorry, just to get to your question, to answer your question. A regulating entity issuing one of these permits always has an obligation to consider this problem of sham permitting. In this case, when it received this report, which PolyMet published to its investors as a signal that, yeah, it was considering these expanded mine options, and it was considering these things before the permit was even issued, at that point, yes, PCA had an obligation to take a hard look.
But isn't that just saying, well, let's make sure that people at the agency are, like, reading the papers, monitoring press releases, looking at filings with other agencies? I mean, isn't it more reasonable to say it was when they got your December 13th letter, that they were, that was the request to look at it? And I asked because that request seemed to be focused on the technical report, mm-hmm. not talking about a lot of the things that were in your SEIS request, like the price of copper. So that's the reason I'm concerned.
Well, when we submitted that to all of the agencies, including the PCA, back in June, which was several weeks rather, after this was released, we included hundreds of pages of supporting information. And, you know, a lot of that information was actually cited by the respondents in their briefs. But the important part of that is it put this report in context. You know, just reading this report is one thing, but having all of the information that we sent to them, which for some reason PCA decided to exclude from the record, that's really the point when they should have looked at this issue. I mean, if you're the agency, the key question in this permit decision, you know, a lot of the permit, you know, it's hundreds of pages of permit. A lot of the permit is ministerial. The regulations dictate what's in the permit. The key question, the one that has some discretion for the agency, is a synthetic miner permit appropriate, or should we go with the full major permit and the full best available control technology analysis? And that's the key question that PCA skipped over. You know, they didn't take a hard look. They didn't make any findings on that. And when you have something like this that changes the story, we submit that it's arbitrary to ignore all of that and not make any findings.
Was the argument made in the summer that because of that report, this was a sham permit?
When we sent this to PCA and DNR in June, no, we didn't use the word sham permitting. But
the first reference to sham permit, December 13th?
No, Your Honor. In our comments that we submitted during the comment period, we noted, and our expert noted, that there is this concept called sham permitting. And that
back
the agency,
before
the end of the
right.
comment period. And the agency has to be careful that it's not issuing a sham permit. And that there is a potential, and this is in our comments, there's a potential because of the existing facility out there that there's a lot of excess crushing capacity.
Which has more lines than they currently propose to run.
Exactly, right. The processing facility in the past operated at upwards of 100,000 tons per day. And you know, we're talking about a 32,000 ton per day cap.
So was the first reference to the sham permitting after the release of the report, the December 13th letter?
We mentioned sham permitting and the concept of sham permitting in our comments at before the end of the comment period.
But at that point in time, that report didn't exist.
Exactly.
That's my question as a follow-up to Judge Jessen's question, is when was the argument of sham permitting first made after the report on which you currently rely with your arguments that it's a sham permit?
December 13th, our letter to the commissioner on December 13th, Your Honor. But sham permitting is not, it's not something that just appeared. I mean, the guidance on sham permitting is longstanding. You know, this is a 1989 guidance document from EPA that we're relying on here that explains that, you know, sometimes you have an entity that wants to get in early and start constructing on a less stringent, you know, less time-consuming permit. And EPA, you know, the real question is, when does a regulator have to, you know, look more closely at these things, and what do they need to look more closely at?
I just want to be sure I understand your position. You're not saying that any time someone makes an allegation of sham permitting, that the agency has a duty to do this independent investigation.
I don't think that this case presents that question. I think this case is much easier, Your Honor.
Well, that's nice, but could you answer my question?
Sure. In this case, we have much more information than just an allegation of sham permitting. But, you know, I think it's a sliding scale. I think that if a commenter has any reason to say, you know, this synthetic miner permit looks like, you know, it might be a sham, it might be a way to circumvent the law, I think the agency has to look at it. And how deep they look at it, how much time they spend, and how much money and experts, and it will depend on the quality of the information presented. I think it's a relative scale.
Thank you.
Sure. I'd like to turn to the standard of review in this case. And in our view, the question for the court in this case is pretty straightforward. Is it arbitrary and capricious for an agency to make a decision on the key question of the case without taking a hard look at the salient issues involved? PCA did not take the hard look. They didn't make any findings on the sham permit issue. So now in their brief, PCA argues for a new, novel, rewritten standard of review. PCA in their brief suggests that the court should give deference to the agency even when it neglects to consider this most important aspect of the problem. That standard of review is not the law in Minnesota. As you know, under Minnesota statute section 14.69, the court can reverse and remand if it finds the agency decision is arbitrary and capricious. An agency's failure to consider an important aspect of the problem is arbitrary and capricious. Without considering the key issues and how it reached its conclusions and explaining its reasoning, the agency's decision is arbitrary.
So can I go back to your point about findings?
Sure.
So what's the best authority for the position that PCA not only had to write a letter, I'm looking at the December 19th letter, but actually make factual findings when it issued the permit, which I take it is what you're saying. I mean, I can understand saying, look, maybe there should have been more things in the letter that should have been addressed. Maybe they should have gone back and looked at some of the issues you raised in the SEIS request. But what's the authority for saying it had to be in the format of findings as opposed to responding in this letter?
Your Honor, the letter wasn't findings, for sure.
I mean,
they issued a findings document that didn't include this. And there was no reason why they couldn't have delayed for enough time to do some investigation and make findings. You know, we're here in a situation trying to have judicial review of a record that's missing the reasoning. You know, we're speculating on what the reasoning is. The argument from that we'll hear later from the agency will explain, I expect, why they did what they did, but an argument is not findings. And the same reason for that, the same reason holds for the letter. The letter isn't findings. It's not it's not the formal explanation for why they did what they did. And, you know, when you have a letter like this, that it's a one-page letter, it just cites the disclaimers in the document, it's one of the danger signals, I think, from the reserve mining case and the other cases where, you know, the agency didn't really look at this hard enough and didn't make a reasoned decision. No formal findings of fact. The letter just cites the disclaimers. And they frustrated our attempts to have a case on this by refusing to put these documents in the record that they had. So I think when you look at the combination of all these things, that these are the type of danger signals that, you know, the Supreme Court has indicated are signals for arbitrary and capricious conduct by the agency.
The letter of the 19th, which is the day before the findings, right?
Yes.
It isn't captioned as findings, but it does say at the bottom of the first page that the technical report does not support MCEA's assertion that PolyMet intends to operate the mine at levels higher than the synthetic miner throughput limits, et cetera, et cetera. That reads to me like a reasoned determination that it's not a sham. That's what that seems like they're saying.
It does seem like they're saying that, Your Honor. But how I respond today is that the information in the technical report is much. It goes far beyond what PolyMet says they're going to do. I mean, they submitted an application saying, yeah, 32,000 tons per day is fine. But on the same time, they're telling their investors, they're signaling to their investors, and that's important. This report is not something that just happened. It's not something that was independently submitted to, you know, the Canadian Securities Board and the U.S. SEC. It was something that PolyMet commissioned so that they could tell their investors, hey, if we, you know, triple the throughput in this mine, we're going to make 10 times more money. Like, instead of a mine that's worth NPV, net present value, of $270 million at the same copper prices at 118,000 tons per day, their own consultants say they're going to make $2 billion. It's a big difference. And for the PCA just to say, oh, PolyMet promises that their intent is not to go beyond that, and there are some disclaimers in this document about, you know, they don't have a permit yet to do this, you know, three times as fast mine, it's just not sufficient. It's not a sufficient engagement in the question to really garner deference from the court on that question.
A lot of businesses start with the notion that they might get bigger in the future, when a lot of operations start that way. Do we have an understanding that if the emissions exceed 250 million tons per year because either the monitoring shows that that's what they're doing, mm-hmm, or that they start new lines, they then have to re-permit under the more stringent standard?
Your Honor, that is the case. There's one aspect to that that is your assumption was a little bit off. I mean, currently the permit has no monitoring. There is no continuous emission monitoring. And if this...
I thought I saw a provision for monitoring of dust from the unpaved roads, for example.
I mean, they do have to monitor the dust from the unpaved roads, but...
I have some questions about that for the MPCA, because I grew up along an unpaved road, but go ahead.
All of those emissions are actually excluded from the 250 tons. We're only looking at the emissions from the stack.
From the plant itself.
From the plant itself.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. But if that happens, mm-hmm, by virtue of expansion or whatever, they have to go back and use the best available technology.
Your Honor, the answer to your question is really the Clean Air Act doesn't allow this. The Clean Air Act requires a pre-construction permit that reflects the planned operation. And when you have a situation when, you know, before the permit's even issued, the company's coming out and telling its investors that, hey, you know, we're thinking about a much faster mine, and guess what? We're going to make 10 times more money. I mean, this is a really unique situation. I mean, what you're explaining is, you know, you can have... I mean, look, sham permitting exists. PCA admits in their websites, in their brief.
Well, that it's there also is a concept that exists in the law.
So there is a concept that exists in the law. And here it is. So sometimes We agree that a synthetic miner source, a source permitted with a synthetic miner permit, has a business need to expand, an unanticipated need that they didn't realize at the time of construction. But sometimes it's the other case. They knew at the time of construction that they're going to expand. So the question for the regulator is, how does the regulator decide? You know, should this be a synthetic miner permit? Is that enough? Or should we require a major source permit, which would require more stringent review, best available control technology to put on at the time of commencement of operation? So EPA has issued guidance on this, and that's the guidance document that we've included in our addendum. And EPA directs the regulator, or EPA if it's one of those states, to look at certain objective factors. And these factors are listed in that guidance. And one of them is statements to investors and lenders. And another one is a consideration of the financial viability of continued operation under the cap. So without looking at those things, without engaging in those things in the reasoned findings, it's hard. I don't see how PCA could say that they did take a hard look. And that's what's required in this case.
So following up on Judge Rodenberg's question, and I understand what you're saying is that, well, even if they have to start all over again, if they ask to expand their permit so that they're effectively a major source, mm-hmm. they have to go back and, you know, use the best available technology. But it's also, that would be a violation of the Clean Air Act if it was a sham permit to begin with, and we're violating the rules. But step back from kind of the, it violates this and that, and tell me if that happens, because what I read some from their argument is, look, as long as we have to start all over again, what's the harm? So tell me from your perspective,
sure.
What's the harm to the state of Minnesota if they later decide to expand as long as they have to go back and have the best technology when they do it?
Well, Your Honor, there are a couple things. One, that's illegal under the Clean Air Act, and they'll probably...
I understand what you're saying about that.
If PCA were doing its job, they would probably fine them and have an enforcement action against them for that, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, it's not fair for the companies that do it right. If a company knows that it's going to be a major source, and they go through the expense and process of the entire major source review and the BACT analysis, you want to have a level playing field so that everyone's operating under the same law. Some are not circumventing. But particular on your question, so one of the advantages to PolyMet by not having a major source permit is that it doesn't have to figure out the best available control technology for greenhouse gases. If this were a major source permit, PolyMet would have had to do a BACT analysis for greenhouse gases. They're exempt under court precedent because they're a minor source. Number two, continuous monitoring would probably be required from the beginning to see if what the emissions actually are minute by minute, hour by hour. Three, they would have had to determine what BACT was for all the stationary source emission, point emission sources, not just the single crusher line. And finally, we don't know what the best available technology review would say. Because it looks at economics and energy and environmental impacts, this is the BACT analysis under federal law, which was adopted by Minnesota, you may have a different answer 3 years from now than you do now. And like we put in our brief, it's harder to figure out how to put a best available technology on and do the analysis when you have an operation that's running, because it's harder to retrofit. It's much easier and more practical to do it in the beginning, which is why the Clean Air Act is set up this way. So that's I hope that answered your question. So I'm going to conclude by saying that PCA failed to answer this key question. And its letter didn't do it. It's why would a for-profit company not aggressively pursue a more profitable alternative that it's published and signaled to its investors that it's considering before the permit was even issued, especially when the company has touted to its investors that the, quote, existing infrastructure supports higher volumes of throughput. We submit this matter should be remanded to PCA for further review, investigation, and adequate findings on this sham permit issue.
The panel may have some more questions.
Sure.
If I may, following up on what you just said, because you did say we at least should be remanding for additional findings or for findings. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, what would our remand instructions look like if we followed that recommendation?
Your Honor, I think that you would remand and you would instruct the agency to take a hard look and to explain why this is a synthetic minor permit and engage in the analysis that's suggested by the EPA guidance document, to look at the objective criteria that they talk about, to look at what's in here, and perhaps to do some more I mean, I don't know how far you want to go, but if I were you, I would ask them to investigate, you know, what PolyMet told its consultants when it was preparing this back in March before the comment period was over. What was the correspondence like? Maybe what kind of exploratory drilling it's done to convert some of its, you know, hoped for mineral reserves into actually indicated mineral reserves. That's one of the reasons why it was a preliminary economic assessment and not a formal feasibility study. You know, maybe they've done more drilling since then. And, you know, they could hire an expert. I mean, they could do, it's really up to them. I mean, it's up to the agency to figure out how to do this analysis, but they can't not do it.
I won't read the sentence again, but if we remand sort of generally to just take a harder look at that question, it seems like they might repeat the sentence I read earlier.
I think they could, and I think that they'd be at risk of another appeal if they didn't really engage in the issue.
All right, you did come up a little short of 30, so well done.
Thank you.
Who's going to go first over here?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Emily Schilling on behalf of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. PCA's determination, found in its December 19, 2018 response to MCEA, that PolyMet's March 2018 Canadian securities filing did not evince PolyMet's intent to expand the North Met mine and circumvent major source permitting reflects reasoned consideration of the evidence before the agency at that time and is due substantial deference. PCA is simply asking this court to apply the traditional arbitrary and capricious and substantial evidence standards set forth in the Minnesota APA.
Counsel, the public comment period closed on March 16th, 2018. Mm-hmm. 10 days later, the technical report is issued. I presume that raised questions with the MBCA when they reviewed it.
PCA did not review the technical report until it received MCEA's December letter, December 2018 letter.
Didn't review it on its own?
They did not.
Okay. All right. And then the day after that, we get a comment from the CEO saying that there's significant additional economic potential for the remainder of the resource for relatively low additional capital costs. And then there are more comments made in July of 18 in a presentation to investors, again, indicating the possibility, if not the likelihood, of expansion of the mine. Agreed? You know, were you aware of that?
At the administrative record in this case did not include those documents because PCA did not have them before them at the time they made the decision, and they were not referenced or relied upon in its decision.
Well, were they referenced and relied upon when the letter of December 13th was issued?
No, the only evidence that was provided to the agency in that December 2018 MCEA correspondence was the technical report. MCEA did not raise any of the other issues related to copper pricing at that time.
All right, but you would acknowledge, I presume, if you're aware, that the value of copper has gone down since that report?
I'm not aware of that. I mean, that was not part of the administrative record before the agency.
Are you aware, of course, that a larger amount, a bigger mine, would be more profitable?
That is certainly what is set forth in the technical report, that there is that potential, yes.
So is the MPCA's position that its hands are tied, given the evidence of the price of copper, the market forces involved, the comments from the CEO, and the technical report, those changes don't influence their decision at all?
Your Honor, they were not provided to the agency, and they were not referenced and relied upon by the agency. The agency did not have that information when it made its decision.
Okay. They do now?
They do now.
Okay.
As relators note in their reply brief at pages 4 and 5, reversal under the arbitrary and capricious standard hinges in this case on an assessment of whether the agency entirely failed to consider an important aspect of the problem as set forth in the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in Trout Unlimited and the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in State Farm. That is not the case here. Relators have not met their burden of proving that PCA's decision should be reversed under MAPA. Relator's substantive case is based on a misstatement of PCA's obligation under the Clean Air Act and Minnesota Rule 7007, and a mischaracterization of both PolyMet Securities filing and the administrative record that was before the agency. First, neither the Minnesota Air Permitting Rules, nor the Clean Air Act statute and its implementing regulations, nor any EPA guidance impose on PCA an affirmative obligation to investigate the intent of permit applicants seeking synthetic miner permits. EPA's 1989 guidance on restricting a source's potential to emit, referred to by counsel, cannot be required to require permitting agencies to undertake such a searching investigation prior to issuance of all synthetic miner permits.
So I do want to just ask you about that authority issue. It's alluded to in your brief, but it's not clear, so I just want to know. Are you saying that it's the commissioner's position that she has no authority to review and investigate, if appropriate, the issue of sham permitting until a source with a minor synthetic permit applies for relaxation of that permit?
No, Your Honor. There's a difference here between what the agency's obligation is and what their authority and discretion would be. Certainly, if there were credible evidence before the agency that there were a sham permit that was going to be issued, they have the discretion to undertake an investigation.
But that's only discretionary?
Yes, Your Honor.
So even if it's a sham, and even if the commissioner determines it's a sham, the commissioner would have the discretion not to do anything about that?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they have the discretion to undertake the investigation to make that determination. Certainly, if based on that investigation, there were a determination that the clear intent of the permit applicant at the time it was accepting those synthetic miner permit conditions was to expand, and that they were just taking them as a means of beginning construction to make it easier, then absolutely their obligation would be to intervene.
This is maybe the point where I should ask my question about what happens if they do expand in the future. Does the commissioner agree that if the emissions exceed 250 million in the future, they have to go back and do the same study that the relators are now asking that they do?
Yes, the Clean Air Act clearly contemplates that companies may expand in the future, and that's the issue. Is there some potential that this project may expand, or that PolyMet may expand? Certainly, I think any regulated entity would look at that as a possibility. And at that point, there are a couple of things that would happen. First, the agency would talk to the permit applicant about what the scope of the project is. Importantly, at that point, there would have to be a determination that if the project went forward, that the Clean Air Act were to go forward, that those emissions would have to meet health-based standards at the fence line. And, you know, that is not always the case. And if that were not the case, they could not issue the permit. They have to make that determination. And then second, if that determination were made, then 40 CFR section 52.21 R4 would obligate the agency to go back and undertake major source permitting as though construction had never commenced. That's the language that's in the regulations.
So there's no shoehorning in the future and say, we can't do the BACT because we're already operating.
No, because that's the standard. There's a recognition that they're not going to allow that EPA delegated permitting authorities are not going to let permitting regulated entities simply use the fact that they're already operating as a basis for not imposing what would have been the best available control technology at the time this original synthetic miner permit was agreed to.
How closely is that monitored? I mean, how much pollution is going to occur before they're called to task on that? It's gone past 32,000 tons per day. Mm-hmm.
So the 32,000, I think it's important. This is the permit. This is the synthetic miner permit. It's 800 pages. That doesn't include the appendices that require modeling to ensure that those standards are met at the fence line. It includes within these conditions hundreds of conditions on throughput to ensure that at no point during the milling process, the grinding process, could there be an ability for PolyMet to increase throughput and therefore model, therefore emissions that would could lead to a violation of the standard at any
Someone point. On site? Is that what you're suggesting?
Pardon me?
Is someone on site?
From the agency?
I'm asking how it's monitored. I understand all the regulations.
There are parametric monitors. The agency has extraordinary record-keeping and reporting obligations to the agency under this permit. It is absolutely monitored.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go back to Judge Justin's question because I didn't really understand the answer. Is it your position, it seems somewhat circular to me, there's evidence, say there's evidence of sham permitting. At what point does the agency have a duty to inquire? I'm not saying a duty to conclude their sham permitting, but at what point do they have a duty to inquire?
There is no clear duty to inquire prior to issuance of the permit in the guidance. That is not to say that if the agency were not presented with credible evidence, that it would not do so. In this case, the agency determined that the technical report did not present that credible evidence in light of a 150,000-page administrative record before it, including certified representations in two separate permit applications by PolyMet and 2 years of dialogue with PolyMet and PCA staff, that there was no indication of such intent, and therefore there was not necessary to undertake an investigation.
But at that time, you weren't aware of the public comments by the CEO and to the investors regarding expansion.
No.
Okay, does that raise a duty to inquire?
Not if it were not before the agency at that point. And I think what the issue here also is that there's an assumption that's being made with respect to whether there is a potential for expansion. The standard under the Clean Air Act guidance is there has to be, in order for the agency to be able to take enforcement action, they have to demonstrate a clear intent that the permittee intended to circumvent the rules and intended to expand. I would posit that in light of this court's decision in the related supplemental EIS, in which the court determined that the technical report does not demonstrate that expansion is reasonable, if it's not reasonable, then it certainly doesn't meet that higher threshold for clear intent to expand.
But Ms. Schilling, isn't there a difference between having to have clear intent to take enforcement action and what information would be appropriate to inquire further? Mm-hmm. And, you know, earlier you would agree with that, correct? And earlier you talked about credible evidence mm-hmm. of intent, and I'm looking at Commissioner Link Stein's, the last paragraph of his letter. He talks about the technical report not indicating any intent. I mean, so this really goes back to the Chief's question, I think, is what's the trigger? What should be enough to say, okay, we got to look more into this further ourselves, as opposed to just looking at the technical report? Is it any intent? Is it credible evidence?
I would argue it's credible evidence of a clear intent. If there was credible evidence that there was an intent, then the agency would undertake that investigation. But the EPA guidance says very specifically that it is a very detailed, it's a case-by-case analysis. So I think it's difficult to make sort of broad assumptions about what that trigger would be in different cases, because the case law recognizes how case-specific it is. But I would say that if PCA had before it what it determined to be credible evidence, then certainly it would be under it would use its authority to undertake an investigation. PCA reasonably determined that PolyMet Securities' filing did not support a finding that the NorthMet mine project was not economically viable at the 32,000 ton per day limits, or that PolyMet was acting in bad faith when it accepted those synthetic miner permit limits. PCA set forth the basis for this determination in its December 19, 2018 response, and that decision is entitled to a presumption of correctness.
Counsel, I just want to be sure, you made some comments, but again, I just want to be sure I understood them. I'm trying to understand how a copper producer, why would they ever seek, a major source permit when they could seek a synthetic miner permit? What's the downside to going in, less financing, you don't have to get into the best available control technology at that point. What is the downside to starting out that way knowing you don't intend to stay there? And then you're going to eventually exceed it.
Well, if you know that you don't have any intent to stay there, then that would be, then you would be seeking a sham permit, and that would be illegal.
I understand that, but you wouldn't necessarily know that I intend that. So I go ahead and I do that. What's my downside?
The downside is that eventually you would have to come back to the agency because you can't just expand. This is your permit, right? You can't just expand without coming back to the agency for additional authorization. And if you did that within the kind of current federal guidance is about 3 years. If you come back to the agency at that point and do that, then there is at least a presumption that the agency is going to take a harder look at what that original permit stood for. So you can't just increase. You've got to go back to the agency, and you've got to. They will apply 52.2 on R4, and then they have the enforcement discretion to take a hard look at that at that point.
Well, they have their foot in the door. It's up and running now. You can't shut it down, I take it.
The agency has authority to do that.
Would that happen?
I can't speak to that. I'm sorry.
But I'm just saying the foot is in the door now.
Mm-hmm.
It's underway.
Right.
The jobs are there, the mining has occurred, and it's much harder than to stop them. They got their foot in the door.
I think it's not that it's much harder to stop them. It would be not in the permittee's best interest to start construction if they knew that, if they had to come back and reapply BACT all over again.
And the record does contain some indication that the BACT is going to be more burdensome if done while the machine is running.
Right. They don't get a free pass simply because the machine is running. That's very clear in the guidance. They have to go back, and that is the language in the regulation, is that it has, that backed analysis has to be applied as though construction never commenced. So it would not be in the permittee's best interest to sort of take that step if it knew it had to come back and do that analysis all over again, and then potentially have to invest in new technology on top of what they've already. I mean, this permit imposes bag houses and HEPA filters, and that's considered industry-backed right now. But who's to say that in the future there isn't going to be something that's more expensive that would require lower emissions that they would then have to invest in?
Any additional questions? It looks like we have none. Do you want to wrap it up?
Yes, certainly. Let me just make sure. I do want to make the point very quickly that the guidance, there is no affirmative obligation in the guidance if you read that carefully. And then that guidance is consistent with EPA's EAB decision in NRE Shell Offshore, which is, as relators note in their opening brief, the primary apposite authority on sham permitting. And that case did not require this inquiry. It based its decision on the record that was before the agency without any additional investigation, and also found that the permittee's decision to request different permit limits under different statutes did not indicate an intent to increase total production, nor did it trigger any sort of investigatory requirement under the statute. So with that in mind, PCA's decision to issue PolyMet's air emissions permit is not arbitrary or capricious and is supported by substantial evidence, and PCA requests that this court affirm.
Thank you.
Morning. May it please the court. I'm Jay Johnson here on behalf of Polymet Mining. I want to start with really what's the foundational premise of Relator's entire argument here, and that's that this technical report, which they brought up as well, is somehow showing an intent to expand. They make it sound as if this really large piece document is focused on larger projects. The truth is that only 10 pages in this 270 pages talk about potential opportunities to expand. The real thrust of this report, the reason Polymet prepared this report, is to conduct a feasibility study of the permitted project, 32,000 tons per day. Relators would have you think that, oh, well, this somehow revealed that the project that's permitted is no longer viable, and Polymet's definitely going to have to move on to a different project that's mentioned briefly in the context of the report. I want to read from the conclusion of the technical report, which is on page 11 of our addendum. It's one sentence. The financial analysis presented in section 22 of this report demonstrates that the NorthMet project, that's the 32,000 tons per day project, is technically viable and has the potential to generate positive economic returns. This conclusion warrants continued work to advance the project to the next level of engineering and development.
And what does the price of copper and the change in the price of copper since that report was issued, what impact has that had?
The only way to answer that question, honestly, Your Honor, would be to conduct another feasibility study and to analyze all of the costs, all of the, you know, prices. And it's not just copper. This is a copper, nickel, platinum mine. So there's three different metal prices. If the price of one goes up, the price of the other might go down. It's really complicated. That's why it takes this many pages to look at it.
But the report itself says if copper prices were to drop 10%, the net present value would drop below zero.
I think that's assuming that other prices remain stable. So if copper prices drop 10% and nickel and platinum prices rose 25%, then there would be a different calculus.
Would you disagree that the bigger the mine, the bigger the profit, that statement?
I would say that it depends on a lot of other factors. All the costs, all the capital costs that would go into expanding the mine. And I would also say, and the report says this, you know, it's not really, before Polymet can even know whether a larger mine would work, it would have to prepare a new feasibility study, something to this level of detail for the larger project. And when it completed that feasibility study, which would take into account current prices of all the metals, the costs of all the construction, the costs of greater pollution controls, and the impacts on the environment, which Polymet also cares very much about. Only after it did that new feasibility study could Polymet sit back and say, okay, now we have a feasibility study for a different project. Should we or should we not pursue permits for this other project?
This is probably a point for my question. I'm two for two so far. Do you agree that if the decision were to be made in the future to proceed to open up more lines and exceed 32,000 tons per day, you have to go to square one on the best available technology question?
I do agree with that. I agree with exactly what PCA's counsel said, and I don't think I can explain it any better than she did. But yes, we would. And
do you also, as one follow-up, do you agree that if you did that soon after this permit, perhaps 3 years or even less, then there may be certain presumptions that apply?
Certain presumptions, meaning that
maybe didn't mean
that it was
maybe
originally
didn't, weren't in good faith in the first place.
That's certainly possible under the EPA rules that there could be a finding, you know, against Polymet in that, depending on all the circumstances, I suppose.
So, Mr. Johnson, I understand you have a different view of the our standard of review, but assuming for a moment that I believe that the PCA had to take a hard look at the salient issues, When does that hard look kick in? Is it when they requested, the realtors gave their SEIS request, when they got the December 13th letter, or you really don't even have to take that hard look at all until, if ever, the PolyMet asked to have the permits relaxed?
I think just to answer your question, first of all, I think there's sort of an ongoing obligation for the agency to review the information that's in front of it. So when, as relators sort of conceded, for the first time they mentioned sham permitting in the context of this report in their December 13 letter, and in that letter said, our request is based on the technical report, not mentioning any other things, then PCA had an obligation to say, okay, let's look at this technical report. What does it say? That's where it comes back to what I was starting the argument with. It doesn't say what they think it says. And PCA looked at it, and they sent a letter on December 19th saying, this technical report doesn't say what you think it says. It actually says that PolyMet is going to go forward with 32,000 and that any other things are speculative. And that's, of course, exactly what the Court of Appeals held in the SEIS case, that the other cases that are taken up in a very small piece of this report are not reasonably foreseeable, and that the economics of the project as permitted are fine to go forward. Now, just to step back, because as you implied, maybe we have a slightly different view of what the hard look standard is. The cases in Minnesota, as I read them, and we're talking about the Citizens Advocating Responsible Development case and the Friends of Twin Lakes case, I think basically what they say is that a hard look is just another way of phrasing the MAPA standard, the Minnesota Administrative Procedure Act standard. The way the Supreme Court says it in Citizens Advocating Responsible Development is, first sentence, our role when reviewing agency actions is to determine whether the agency took a hard look at the problems involved. The next sentence says, agency decisions are reversed when they reflect an error of law, the findings are arbitrary and capricious, or the findings are unsupported by substantial evidence. I take that basically to mean if MAPA standard isn't satisfied, then the agency didn't take a hard look.
But doesn't that really lead us to one of Realtor's earlier questions, the appellant's earlier questions, that we don't even have findings here? I mean, the cases you just talked about supporting findings, and we don't have them. Could you address that?
I think that the findings are certainly extensive about PolyMet is going to build a 32,000 tons per day project. There are years of findings talking about that, going all the way back to the environmental impact statement and the findings in this case. When someone raised a specific question, oh, there's a new technical report, doesn't that show sham permitting? And they asked that question to PCA. PCA looked at that and said, no, you're wrong, it doesn't show that.
You're talking about the December exchange
December
of correspondence.
December 13th and 19th letter exchange, yes.
But you agree those aren't,
No, please.
But my point was that letter is, those aren't legal, those aren't findings, which were referred to in those earlier cases about the hard look.
Well, I think agency decisions can certainly be more informal, as in a letter. It's in the administrative record. I have the page, but I'm sure you guys probably know where those two letters are. The question is just, was the conclusion in the letter, the conclusion that Judge Rodenberg read, the one sentence this doesn't support, was that supported by substantial evidence? Was it arbitrary and capricious somehow? And I think looking at the technical report, as relators asked PCA to do, and reading it, I think it's perfectly supported by substantial evidence and not arbitrary and capricious for PCA to say, this report doesn't show an intent to expand. And that's really the only question. I think what relators are trying to do with hard look is to say, well, and they even say this on the first page of their reply brief, we don't necessarily have to win on the sham permitting question. We can win just because they didn't do enough. I don't think there's any Minnesota case that says that about anything. It's the cases say we reverse if there's a violation of the Minnesota Administrative Procedure Act, because that means there wasn't a hard look. If there's substantial evidence, the agency took a hard look at it and made its conclusion. I think I'd like to address a few of the other sort of questions that have come out in the course of the discussion here.
Counselor, just to be clear, I take it your position is the technical report that we just discussed here did not raise a duty to inquire on the part of the MPCA to look into it further.
I think that the duty that, well, the request that was made by relators on December 13 was, look at this report. Doesn't it say there's a sham permit? And what PCA did was look at the report and conclude, no. If we read this report, and if the report says PolyMet's focus and intention is to put into operation the 32,000 tons per day decision detailed in this technical report as soon as possible, and it also says PolyMet would need to prepare preliminary and definitive feasibility studies, conduct an environmental analysis, budget and cost decisions prior to even deciding to apply for permits, that was the evidence that PCA had in front of it, and it looked at it. Would they have to inquire further beyond that? I think even relators concede that they're sort of, well, you know, there's no hard line in the sand of how much they have to inquire. They have to inquire based on the evidence that they have. If they look at the evidence that they have and it's pretty clear that there's no intent to expand, I don't think that there's a special additional duty on top of that imposed by the Clean Air Act or anything else that says, well, even if everything says no intent to expand, you have to assume the worst about PolyMet, because you know that they're, you know, somehow secretly planning to do something else. So go investigate even more, even though your look at the evidence that you have says they're not intending to expand.
Well, the technical report does go into preliminary economic assessments with much larger mining. You would agree it does that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
The technical report goes into much, you know, preliminary economic assessments, the PEAs, with much larger mining, way past 32,000 tons per day. You agree with that? The 59,000 TPD and up to 118 PEP. Doesn't that raise the duty to inquire why we're going through all these assessments 10 days after the public comment period has ended? In other words, it looks to me like this corporation is seriously considering expanding well beyond the application for the permit.
Well, I think when you read what the report says, you're right that it has 59,000 and 118,000 scenarios in a preliminary economic assessment, which is just what it says, a preliminary economic assessment, just considering whether this is potentially an economically profitable thing to do. What the report says about that is that PolyMet's doing this because its job is to consider whether there's potential ways to improve the project in the future. And that's exactly what it says. We're considering opportunities, but there are opportunities, and we would have to go through all of these other steps that I just talked about, including an actual feasibility study to determine whether these potential changes would ever be feasible, you know, much less truly, you know, viable, considering all of the facts before we could make a decision to move forward with potential changes in the future. But today, we're giving you this 250 pages of the project that's permitted is viable. And that's, I think that it was completely legitimate for PCA to look at that information and say, yeah, we read the report and it doesn't say an intent to expand. It says maybe there are potential opportunities out there. If those opportunities ever happen and PolyMet comes back with a new proposal, then at that time we'll be able to apply the rules, and PolyMet would have to comply with best available control technology if it ever...
Which is actually, from the way I understand both the discussion here and the record, more expensive at that point in time.
Yes, that's right. And I think one of the questions was, you know, what's the downside for PolyMet to first propose something small and then later expand? Well, the downside is they spent millions of dollars getting the past 15 years to happen. And if they want to change it, they're going to have to go back and spend a whole bunch more money.
Which presumably their investors wouldn't if that really was the plan, their investors would probably say, do the study now. I can't speak for an investor, but I mean, that right. sounds like that would be a terrible plan.
It would probably not be a great plan to double spend your money in a, you know. So my time's expired, but I'm very happy to answer.
Well, I, to follow up on that, you agree there will not be an argument made in the future that we're going now, so we should be allowed to exceed the limits of the 250 because we have these jobs and we can't go back and do that. That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen that PolyMed is going to try to circumvent the law. And like PCA said, and I agree, the law is if you go back and change a project, then you have to pretend that it was never constructed in the first place.
Well, I just have a question then. You mentioned spending millions at this stage, but the best available control technology would have cost a lot more had it been involved at this stage as well.
Well, no, I think what PCA's attorney said, and I agree, is that what they've done now is the best available control technology that's possible. I mean, the 800-page air permit includes state-of-the-art control technology.
For 32,000 tons.
For 32,000 tons as it exists today. If, you know, in the future there's better technology and there's a proposed expansion, then, as PCA's attorney said, then PolyMed would have to maybe say, oh, wait, there's actually something better now, and we're going to have to employ that because what we put in before, even though it was the best thing we could do then, we have to change our process because of changed technology or something like that.
One last question. Judge Rodenberg used a 3-year window. At what point is the window closed? In other words, at what point does it raise an issue of a possible sham permit application? He mentioned 3 years.
What the guidance actually says, and I think this is on page 27 of the relator's addendum, is if someone applies for a new air permit at the time of or shortly thereafter, or I think it's somewhere in parentheses says within a year, that's what the guidance says. I mean, I think it's for the PCA to judge, and all the circumstances would have to be taken into account. Other than that 1-year statement in the guidance, I don't know of any other time frames that are out there.
So you could go a year and a half and suggest that it's not a sham permit by at least not a prima facie case.
I wouldn't want to speculate on all the factors.
I understand.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, even if PolyMet did it in a year or in 6 months, they would still have to go back and comply with all the best available control technology.
I understand.
Well, I just want to follow up. It's not just a matter of just going back, because if you came back in, let's say, 2 years and the MPCA said, no, that, you know, looking at all of this, we find this was a sham permit, then you would have been operating without a permit as in violation of the Clean Air Act, right? Which has a whole nother set of consequences. Isn't that fair to say?
I guess I don't know the answer to whether saying it's a sham permit means you were actually operating without a permit. I mean, you were still, as long as they were still, just thinking it through, as long as they were still actually pursuing, you know, putting 32,000 through the, you know, complying with the permit they had, I guess I wouldn't necessarily think they were operating without a permit, but I don't know.
I thought
for sure
that having a sham permit meant it was a void permit.
I'm not sure. I guess I don't know the answer to that question. And the other thing I would say, too, just to make it more complicated perhaps, is if PolyMet were to expand in the future, it wouldn't just be the air permit that was affected. It would require
water and mining
huge changes to lots of permits, because every single permit and the EIS itself all say 32,000 tons per day. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Relators have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish to use that time.
Sorry. It's a lot to cover, Your Honor. I do want to make a few points in response to a lot of the discussion that's happened. We talked about this technical report a lot. And, you know, the key point about this technical report is there were previous technical reports. And this March 26, 2018 technical report is the first one with these expanded cases. And these expanded cases weren't required by anything. PolyMet also requested that M3, their consultant, investigate potential economic valuations using PEA levels for higher throughputs. This is something
that... What page
that
is that on?
Sorry?
What page were you looking at?
I was looking at the executive summary of the technical report right in the beginning.
Okay.
So, you know, there was... If PolyMet was intending all along to stay within its 32,000 ton per day limit, there'd be no reason to pay M3 to do this report. And more importantly, there'd be no reason to release all of this information to investors about the potential economic benefit to PolyMet and its investors of doing this expanded mine. I mean, the thing about sham permitting is most of the time, there isn't any information like this. It's always a retrospective look because no company is going to say during the permit review that they're considering and publishing to investors these possibilities that they're going to make 10 times more profit if they can just release themselves from this permit limitation that they've agreed to. It's very rare. So, when should, the question came up, when should PCA have done something? You know, we, and I want to repeat that we mentioned the possibility of sham permitting and the point that the sham permit, that there are sham permits and the agency should, you know, consider this. And in the original permit comments, in the technical report, which we submitted to them in June, we submitted a lot of information with that. And that was exactly the time that the PCA should have been reviewing the comments. There's no reason it could have done more investigation, more findings, more looking at that time. And finally, you know, there was no deadline to get this permit out. There was no statutory thing that said you have to do it by December 20th. That was self-imposed. They could have taken a few more weeks or months or whatever they needed to inquire, to do some looking, to really engage in this question. PCA's attorney said when she was standing here that if there is credible evidence of intent, then yeah, sure, there's at least authority to investigate and potentially an obligation. We submit there is credible evidence here. This evidence is sort of remarkable. You know, I've been working in the Clean Air Act for years and I've never seen anything like this before. We also had a brief discussion of the SEIS case that this court decided a few months ago. The law is completely different. The controlling law here is the Clean Air Act and what's required under the Clean Air Act in terms of sham permitting. In that case, it was state rules on when an SEIS supplement was required. Different controlling law. And on the question of BACT, you know, there's been tremendous litigation in federal courts over the years about when is a company trying to circumvent either on purpose or on accident or, you know, one hand not knowing what the other hand is doing. And we cited some articles about this, you know, the Catch Me If You Can article that we put in our brief. This is really the key question for the agency here. When someone comes in for a synthetic miner permit and there's all this information about, you know, potential expansion opportunities, the agency can't simply write a letter and say, yeah, we believe the company. They have to do more. They have to take a hard look, and they have to make findings on the issue. And without the findings, we're sort of operating, the court's operating in the dark as to what, how to review what PCA did. And failure to make findings, failure to really engage in, one, is this operation financially viable? And two, like, what's the possibility for expansion based on the objective criteria that the EPA directed agencies to look at under the guidance document? I know I'm short on time, but...
Well, you did save a few minutes before, so I'm not going to be too technical
You know,
on
the
that.
EPA issued this guidance document. They said sham permits are not allowed by the Clean Air Act. And then it says guidelines for determining when miner source construction permits are shams. The following are criteria which should be scrutinized when making a determination. And then it lists, you know, several things. This is addendum 27, 28, and et cetera. And none of these things are in the permit application. I mean, EPA contemplates that a regulator, when necessary, case-by-case basis, needs to look beyond the four corners of what was submitted. And we submit that PCA failed to do that. They failed to make findings, and they failed to really take a hard look, and their decision was arbitrary and should be reversed for findings so that we can review them as a court and as the public, as relators.
It appears the panel has no additional questions. The matter is submitted. We thank counsel for your briefing and argument, and I would be remiss if I didn't also compliment the members of the public who were here, very attentive throughout, orderly, and very interested in the outcome. Thank you for being here. We're adjourned.